This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by the Parent House. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Oregon State Legislature meeting in Salem. It's a short, constitutionally mandated 35-day session. We're trying to do frequent check-ins with lawmakers whose districts include Douglas County, and that means in the loop and on the radio with us right now is State Representative Cedric Hayden, who's from Lane County but represents part of Douglas County as well. Cedric, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for giving me a call here. We are in full speed ahead in the legislative session. We have a couple of deadlines. So one that came and went last Friday, just to kind of get people caught up on what we do during the short session. We have approximately, by my count, 260 bills that were introduced or legislative concepts. We have 35 days to work through that. Last Friday was our first deadline. 28 of those bills didn't move forward, and this Thursday is the next deadline that we have 232 bills to consider.
And what's the general mood in the Capitol this week?
So at this point, there's a couple of controversial concepts moving through the building. As we've talked, the day before the Timber Unity rally was coming to the building, there was nervousness about that. Can I get there? There was some of the chairs did delay their committees, although we didn't see the need for that. They just kind of chose to do that, in our opinion, as a statement. But I drove up that morning, and a lot of trucks out on the road. They were very courteous, left a lane of traffic open for us to get through, and committees were able to start. We had approximately 1,100 trucks. I was told 1,124 trucks came up with just under 10,000 people. And so there was a lot of nervousness about that. Rally came, made a good point about the cap and trade, and that has turned into discussions with the cap and trade. And so that's probably the biggest item that they're looking at, and there is continuing to have amendments to that. The other controversial stuff that you asked a little bit, and we were running out of time last time, is the Second Amendment bills, or, you know, the right for you to bear arms, as we like to protect in our Second Amendment. And so there's two bills on that one in particular. One is House Bill 4005. There will be in Judiciary, which is a committee that deals with some of the regulations and laws, at 1 p.m. There is going to be a work session or a vote on that bill. And this has to do with what they call the Safe Storage Bill. How that firearm is handled when you're not actively using it, trigger locks or cable locks or some sort of safe storage for that. What they have proposed in the bill as is now, although there are 8 amendments that are up on OLIS on our legislative information system that we can read, that could happen today here in about a half an hour. The penalties range from a Class A to a Class C, depending on what incident happens. If a minor got a hold of that firearm, it would be a Class A, and if you were caught not complying with the trigger lock or something like that that was determined not to be, it would be a Class C. And if you don't report a stolen weapon within 72 hours, or have a reasonable expectation that you should have known that it was stolen, it would be a Class B felony. So felonies on that one. One other one that is coming from the Senate side, that is Senate Bill 1538. This is a concealed carry limits bill. And what that would do is it would allow or authorize cities, counties, metropolitan areas, service districts, school districts, colleges, universities to adapt ordinances or policies limiting or precluding the affirmative defense of possession of firearm, meaning that we do have protections under Second Amendment that concealed carry people that have that appropriate license can carry in certain places. This legislation, if it went through, would say that they those places could decide whether that was legal or not, and it comes with a really hefty violation, a maximum of 5 years in prison and a $125,000 fine or both.
If that aspect were to go through, do you think it would likely be challenged as not being in agreement with federal rules, and that federal rules based from the Second Amendment and beyond would supersede that?
I believe that it would, and, you know, there is that conversation here in the building, not just on Second Amendment, but other bills, even bills in healthcare on the committees that I serve on. And I have actually gone to our legislative council, which is the attorneys that we have access to here, and I have asked, you know, if a bill is passed that isn't constitutional, we know it's not constitutional, is there any restriction on us, you know, proposing a bill like that and doing it, and there's no restriction on that, and so the legislature can pass whether it violates the federal constitution or whether it violates our state constitution. They can pass that, and then it's up to the judicial or the court system to determine what that is. And so, do I think there would be a challenge to that if that law were to pass without any modification to it? I believe that there would.
And then, of course, it would be back and forth, and it would probably end up going through multiple levels of the court system and, you know, languish kind of in limbo for quite a while.
Oh, you know, those work through the process if they were started at the state level and eventually work through the court system and eventually potentially end up at the Supreme Court where the final decision is made for that. And of course, we know that that can take years and years and years to go through that process.
Let me go back to the cap and trade bill for a moment. Now, following the timber unity rally, I understand earlier this week there was a rally from the other side, if you will, of the argument. How large was that group?
You know, I was in committee and busy at that time, so I didn't make it to that. I did see some photos of that rally, but I think it was pretty not very comparable to the Timber Unity rally. I haven't researched to see any numbers on that, but, you know, when the Timber Unity rally was going on, you know, you couldn't be in the building without being aware that they were there. My staff came to me and said, hey, the rally is supposed to be out your back window, and we stood there and looked, and we didn't see anybody. I think there were some people out on the front porch. My office is on the back side of the building, and so not near the presence was felt here.
Now, some folks on the Republican side have talked about asking the Democrats to put this cap and trade bill, however it ends up getting finalized, to a vote of the people as opposed to being voted on by the legislature. Do you hear any openness from the Democrats to doing that?
Well, I think that's going to boil down here. You know, we got deadlines coming up. As I said, Thursday deadlines. Of course, they can keep these bills in several committees that the timelines don't matter, and that's the House rules or the Senate rules or Joint Ways and Means, Revenue and Finance committees that we have here. And so those legislation that are in those go on until sine die, basically until the 35 days expire, or the president and the speaker of the House decide to end the session before the 35 days. And so I don't know what's going to happen particularly with that, but what our leadership has been consistently saying is, you know, work with us. You know, let's come to a compromise, introducing some concepts that we think that we could work with. And that has pretty much fell on deaf ears. And so a substitute to that conversation is, okay, you seem convinced that you're going to write the policy without any input from our side of the conversation. And so if that is the case, you know, what we believe is that you need to take the emergency clause off so that if citizens want to challenge that and have that particular legislation go before voters, they have the opportunity to do it. That's a little different than a like a House joint resolution where it automatically goes to it. That's not quite as strong, but at least it would give opportunity for citizens to be involved with that and to vote on that versus the emergency clause, which is kind of a legal process to say, okay, this is an emergency, and so it avoids the opportunity to go out to the voters, and we are opposed to that.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More with State Representative Cedric Hayden when we come back in part two, the interview podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1245 on Inside Douglas County from News Radio 1240 KQEN. We're joined by State Representative Cedric Hayden as we continue looking at what's happening. He's joining us from Salem. Now, Cedric, you're in leadership now in House Republicans. In a short session, what kind of work does that add to your plate?
What that adds to my plate is quite a few more additional meetings, which usually take place early in the morning on the phone or late in the evening. And so those have to do with kind of the organization of policy and the conversations, being in the room of how the House Republican Caucus manages the schedule. What I mean by that is there is some negotiations on how we proceed. There are rules which are set up to govern ourselves, and there's committees that do that. And one of the ones that was recently set up is the Legislative Conduct Committee, or basically how we police ourselves. And that was set up with a bipartisan intent of two members on the House and two members on the Senate, and both from the Republican and Democrat side. And when they put those committees in place, both the President and the Speaker of the House just assumed that they would have a chair of their choice, and the committees are run by the majority party. And we push back, and so one of the things that we do in leadership is get involved with some of the technical workings of it. We push back and had success today with getting both sides as co-chairs of that. So that's just an example of the function of what we do. Other things, time management, whether we require that the, you know, our Constitution says that all the bills have to be read word for word. And so we have the choice to represent our citizens to have that language read word for word. Well, it typically what happens is that rule is suspended and then they read a pony or just a brief description of what the bill does. And the leadership decides how to manage that. And so what we're doing so far is we're having all of the bills read word for word. And so everybody gets to hear exactly what that bill does. And so that at this point, not enough bills have gotten through committee, but there will be pressure on those. And we also make the choice of, if we don't like a bill, how many minority reports do we want to push forward? And so what that means is if there's a bill that's a policy bill that we think there's generally some good ideas in that, but our amendments weren't passed, our changes to that, then we can bring to the House floor a policy that is fairly closely aligned with that, but some changes in it, and have that read on the House floor and vote for the same type of concept, but with different parameters to that. And so those kind of, you know, kind of more involved process procedure stuff, I'm more involved with that. And, you know, that does take a little more time commitment.
And does that mean that then you get, because I'm sure somebody's asking, well, is this really necessary? Does it put you behind the track that the Senate's on, especially with this limited 35-day period?
Well, that is up to interpretation of whether it puts you behind or do you rush through and try and pass as much large policy. Basically, what we have said through our leader, Representative Christine Drazen, is that we believe that at this point, we should read the bills unless that is a budgetary bill. And that's what the short session is set up for. So all of the budget tweaks and things like that, we wouldn't read those bills. So that wouldn't be a delay tactic or something that, you know, would put pressure on how much large policies like cap and trade, policies like significantly changing somebody's, Second Amendment rights. How much of that are we going to do versus what we were sent here by voters to do and budget? And so we're saying budgets go under a routine process, but the policy bills, we're going to take some time to consider that. Example, I've got, a half a dozen, or actually about a dozen bills in my health care committee that we have to decide, and we have about 7 minutes per bill to discuss the policy. That frankly just isn't enough time to digest that.
And with the cap and trade measure being the really large controversial bill, one of the questions from both sides coming into this session, and this was really more a Senate issue because they were the only chamber that did it last time around. Is there going to be any kind of a walkout? Is that still a possibility from the GOP?
Yeah, I believe that is still on the table. It's one of the possibilities. It's interesting how this is all going to come together or not come together. You've probably are aware that recently the governor made an announcement that some of the ballot measures from the timber industry and then the environmentalists are going to come off, and they're going to work to come to some sort of consensus with the forest practice management moving forward. Well, we'll see a day after that the court ruling on three of those ballot measures that the Secretary of State said didn't fit into the single subject rule, which was affirmed by the first layer of court that went through today. That decision was reversed. So we'll see how strong that coalition is as there's pressure on that. And even though those two subject matters are not tied together, the cap and trade is separate from the negotiation with the Forest Practice Act and the environmentalists as they're trying to come to some compromise there. But we'll see how strong that alliance is.
And I know I saw a statement yesterday, I don't have it in front of me, but from the Senate leader from Grants Pass, who was critical of that agreement, and even I've seen some things from some members of the GOP, even not happy with some of the timber organizations for being a part of that.
Yeah, and so that information, that's still disseminating out to us. Our leadership was not involved in those conversations, as far as I know, on the for sure on the House, but on the Senate side, wasn't involved with that. And we don't know fully yet to the extent that, what that coalition, of course, we've seen the people that have signed on to it, but we don't know how much information they disseminated out to other partners in that. So there has been some definitely some concern about that and some criticism of that deal. So we will, we will see again. We'll have to see how strong that is moving forward.
With the 35-day session, are you going to be working on the floor this Saturday or maybe even Saturday and Sunday?
Well, we don't know. That is up to negotiation, and that is a conversation that is happening now with our leadership and the other leadership, and there's discussions of whether they move through Friday, Saturday, Sunday floor sessions. Right now, we don't have enough bills that have gotten through, but by the end of the week, that may change. Right now, my understanding is that there is a strong possibility of a Friday schedule, but at this point, not enough bills have come through for a Saturday or Sunday schedule. So that is still up in the air. I don't have an answer for that yet.
And with the Washington's birthday, President's Day holiday Monday, does that impact the legislature, or do you still meet?
No, we still meet. We still will be here working, and that's not a holiday that we take off here.
Now, looking at this very limited period of time in past short sessions, one of the things that's been out there probably from both sides of the aisle has been if you don't get through everything, short break, come back in a special session. If too many items remain on the cutting room floor, if you will, have you heard any talk about that so far?
At this point, no. I don't think a special session is really on anybody's radar. Maybe in a few weeks that will be talked about more. What's being talked about now is the budget forecast that came out recently. Of course, we're looking at $648.8 million increase in that, or from the last budget, $270 million increase. So a lot more money looks like it's coming in than was anticipated. And so what we're more concentrated on now is, you know, we've got a really strong economy for Oregon. We've got more money coming in than ever before, yet we're still seeing increase in tax demands or tax bills. And so we're more concentrated on what's in front of us today rather than a special session and try and minimize any tax impact.
All right, another check in there from Salem. State Representative Cedric Hayden, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
1258, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by The Parent House. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.